You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer. Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast.
I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And we're here to give you the tools and knowledge to invest both your time and money better.
If you're new, feel free to jump in with our Starter Pack series that aired in early 2022, or our Shares or ETF mini series.
We've got plenty to share with you in today's episode, but if you want to catch us on socials,
head to Rask Australia on Insta and Twitter.
I'm also found at Kate Campbell AUS on Insta.
And I'm Owen Rask AU on Insta.
Just beware of the fake accounts. We'll never DM you about trading strategies or crypto. And if it sounds a bit weird, it's probably not us.
And just one final heads up before we get into the show. This podcast contains general financial information only.
Welcome back to the Australian Finance Podcast. I'm Kate Campbell and I'm here with my co-host Owen Rask.
G'day Kate, how are you going?
I am doing very well. Today we've got Nick Nicolaides, the founder of Perla, back on the show. If you've been listening for a while, there are some episodes I'll link to in the show notes so you can tune into those as well. Perla has been a wonderful long-term partner of the podcast and enables you to buy and sell shares and ETFs, automate your investments and track your portfolio. In today's conversation, we're tackling a topic Nick is very familiar with, ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Specifically, we're going to talk about thematic ETFs and how they differ from those core ETFs in your portfolio. We'll talk about how new ETFs come to market and some of those behind-the-scenes details that, as a regular consumer, we don't really hear about. So Nick's going to give us all the juicy details. And we're also going to talk about, are you falling prey to an ETF hype cycle or are you making an informed decision? Plenty for brand new and experienced investors alike to learn today. So let's jump in. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to be here with you, Nick, as always. So Nick has appeared on the show before. Co-founder of Perla, Hayden, has also appeared on the RAS network before. It's great to have you both in Melbourne, mate.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully, we're getting better each time. I'm not sure, though.
I think you are. You've had a haircut. Things are looking good, mate. Things are looking good. So, maybe to set the scene, Kate, we put Nick straight into it.
Yes. So, Nick, we really wanted to talk today and differentiate thematic ETFs from our core ETFs because Owen and I often talk about our core and satellite portfolios. So those core building blocks, maybe it's investing in Australian companies through an ETF or US companies, but we also sometimes invest in thematic ETFs. So we might be really excited about robotics or AI or, I don't know, lithium Owen was talking about before.
Copper, yep.
So I was wondering if you could sort of broadly talk about how thematic ETFs differ from our core ETFs.
Yep, sure. I mean, core ETFs are really getting to a point where they're well understood, and that's what's created this big ETF industry. Mm. And so we got to remind ourselves, this is the finance industry. They're trying to create products for people like us to buy, hopefully not sell, you know? So thematic ETFs, like, let's just summarize it. We're at the point where an ETF has kind of been labeled as this thing where it's a big index, many, many, many stocks. It's a great way to get diversification. It's cost effective. Thematics are at this end of the spectrum where it's like, well, we've already sold you that. What else can we sell you? Oh, we can wrap other ideas into ETFs. First, it started with like gold. And now we've gotten to a point where there's a thematic ETF for almost anything. And in Australia, some examples more recently are, you know, when we were going through the last crypto cycle, there were a few that came out around that. Since then, there've been things around semiconductors that are trying to tell you about their links to AI. So it's always something new, and that's not a bad thing, but you just got to be aware.
Mm. So some of those themes that have come out in the last few years, there seems to be some connotations that a lot of those are kind of just, you know, maybe not necessarily something everyone needs in their portfolio. Maybe some of them are. How do you think about whether, like, if they are kind of this newer kind of feel, like we've established ETFs as this core part of our wealth, and now they're looking to sell us something, does that mean they're bad?
Well, there's a few things that there's a simple answer, but no, they're not bad. They're not. And if you think, I wasn't alive, I don't think, when the first ETF was put out there, but let's just assume there were some really smart finance types that were like, ETFs are dumb. You're going to get market returns. We're way smarter. We can pick all the stocks. Such a silly idea. So let's assume they've all been proven pretty well wrong over the last 30, 40 years. And, you know, now we're at a point where you can't say that a simple wrapper or a way of investing something is wrong. You can say that it's easier for people to misuse, and that could happen. You could say that it's easier to be given that false sense of scarcity or FOMO that makes you want to act really quickly and maybe act at a point where you're not considering the future. But no, I mean, let's just sort of start again and go, it's simply a way to invest in something that's more than one stock. Mm-hmm. So no, it can't be bad.
Yeah. So effectively, what you're saying is like in moderation. It's like, because if we take some examples from recent years, like you mentioned before, some of those have been good and some of those have been bad.
Well, and time will tell.
Yeah. Right? More true so far. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they may have been good at the start and then went bad. And there are some examples, I think, maybe in the impact or ESG investing space. And they may have started off and went bad straight away, i.e. when you're bought into, say, some crypto-linked ETFs right at the top of the market. But time will tell. And for those investors who were buying for the right reasons or really know about that space, maybe it'll turn out to be a really smart thing. But time will tell.
And that's a really important starting point, I think, because if you just think of ETFs as the box, we've talked about the favorites analogy on the podcast in the past. You can have the box, you can see inside of it, and you can buy boxes of different things. And so maybe you have an ETF with gold in it or just robotic companies, or you get the top 200 Australian companies. ETFs are a neutral investment vehicle, and it's what you put inside them that matters. So, Nick, I was wondering if you could share a thematic ETF story, because there have been quite a few in recent years. Some have got more attention than others, and some have got a lot more investor funds than others.
Yeah. So, I think a great one to start with is in the clean energy space. And so, like, let's not get into specific ones, but I think there have been a handful that were focused, this is in 2022, 2023, on either clean energy, different forms of energy like hydrogen, et cetera. And, you know, they're valid and well-accepted technologies. And there are a number of people around the world that think they are very crucial to the next 20, 40, whatever years in terms of our life on this planet. But they're in a point of the cycle where because of rising interest rates and various other factors, they've performed incredibly badly. And so it is an area where, from the Perla community's perspective, we do see a few people going, oh, I bought such and such ETF or clean or whatever it is, and it's still down. Everything else has gone up and it's still down. And you know, that's just the journey of an investor. And I think it really brings up the whole point of, well, how much did you put into that? Because, you know, coming back to the box, if there's only a few things in the box, then by default, it should only be a small part of your portfolio, right?
And that's the thing with thematic ETFs. There's often less diversification because it's focusing on a very specific theme. Suddenly, you've got 30 companies all within the same industry that are getting affected by similar market conditions. It's not as diversified as having 200 different Australian companies in your box.
Absolutely. And the way you can kind of play it as a good thing or a bad thing is, if you wanted to be exposed to, say, a green energy, you could go and try and pick a company that does something in that space. And who am I to say that's better or worse? But all I know is it's probably easier to pick the ETF that has 30 of those companies in it than it is to pick one. And then it's probably easier just to pick a broader market index that is going to have those energy companies in it if they become successful anyway. So it's really a matter of degrees.
So in terms of those types of things, seem like they're pretty easy to get around. As in, everyone loves a story, and you've been in this game long enough to know people have something called a narrative bias, where they kind of buy into the story and they convince themselves and so on and so forth. How do you think about that side of the thematic kind of ecosystem in terms of people being aware of how it works?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think you mean When you say how it works, you mean how the ETF works or how it works within someone's portfolio?
Well, probably the first part is like how the actual ETF cookie cutting machine kind of works, and then we can talk about the portfolio.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we've conditioned ourselves to think it is a really cookie cutter approach, and the more specialized you get, the less cookie cutter it is, right? Mm. So if we take the S&P 500 versus a thematic ETF that has 30 stocks in it, the S&P 500 has a, you know, decades long formula that people can understand, and it's largely driven by size and geography, right? If you're picking a particular index that has 30 companies in it that do a particular thing, you know, don't kid yourself. At some point, some finance people have sat down and used rules that they've created to filter out and find those 30 companies. And so, whilst it might hide behind this wall, this mystique, you are still putting your money in the idea that someone has decided in a theme and some metrics, and that's fine.
Mm.
But it's not a cookie cutter necessarily. And I think that's a really good distinction to make with thematics. Don't assume it's a cookie cutter. And even if you do the research and look at the companies, there is a formula. There is some science behind it, and someone's come up with that. So, you know, you got to look past that, I think, and really truly think, is this idea something I believe in? Am I doing it for the right reasons? Because you're never going to understand the cookie cutter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's particularly with the types of what we would call back testing that goes on in the industry. A lot of providers, when they come up with these ideas and they use, whether it's algorithmic or human oversight or both, they do filter through it and they do offer products that they believe, for the most part, are providing unique exposure to an important theme or sector of the market. Some people lump them in together.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, just to stop for a second, Perla was built on the idea that ETFs are a fantastic wealth building tool. So we are going to build a platform and technology that makes investing in them easier. So we are advocates for ETFs.
Yep.
And I think we're advocates for the education around them too. I think one thing to really think about when it comes to thematics is, you know, having rules for yourself. So it's a wonderful thing to take control of your portfolio. And I think that's when the best learning and the best, you know, outcomes happen. But I think, you know, you have to give yourself some discipline around, well, this is only ever going to be 1 to X% of my portfolio, and stick to it. And I think if you take the emotion out of it, it becomes a lot easier. Mm. And on the flip side, you can then create your own little personal portfolio, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, Nick, as someone running a brokerage platform where people can buy and sell these ETFs, you get to see firsthand what happens on day one when an ETF doesn't exist, and then the next day it is listed for purchase and anyone can go and buy and sell units in that ETF. Have you seen any interesting trends, or do you have any insights from what day one looks like for new ETFs on your platform?
Yeah. I mean, you got to go back before day one, I think, to tell this story, right? So before day one, and you mentioned before backtesting and whatnot, and I hate to keep coming back to it, but you are being sold a product. And so the back testing that goes on creates a nice mix of historic returns. And even though we're told and we should believe that historic returns don't predict the future, ETF businesses will use that as a marketing tool because they know people look at it, right? So you've been packaged up something where an element of the science is back testing what the performance may have been for a period of time for these companies. So you start—
May being the important word there.
Yes, exactly. So you're starting at a point where you're going, okay, there's a lot of work that's been put into this, and a lot of time and regulatory approvals that have taken us to get to this point, whilst probably this theme has been on a bit of a run, because no one wants to list a thematic ETF when the theme is in the doldrums, right? So really you start with a critical framework of, I'm being sold a product that's been packaged up with a bow on top, and it's being done at a time where the people selling it to me think it's going to be the most attractive to me. If we stop there and you go, okay, we might have an understanding of an IPO where a company lists their stock and there's a limited amount of their stock, and you hear stories of it popping and going up really quickly on day one or going down. None of that really matters with an ETF. It's like it exists. And we'll get into how it happens, but it exists. There is no FOMO. There is no reason. There's no special deal. It just exists one day, and it just is an empty box, and then all of a sudden the box has something in it, and the more people want to buy, the more it gets filled up, and off you go. So the idea that there's some timing or need to act on day one of an ETF is a complete made-up concept.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. It's like going back to that box analogy, it would be like if you bought one off the shelf, like a box of favorites, another one would just instantly appear right behind it. There's no like scarcity, like you're saying.
Yeah.
So people don't need to buy it on day one necessarily as much as the marketing maybe suggest.
And so if you were trying to create like a checklist for yourself because you were waiting on an ETF you knew was coming, I think, you know, we talked about setting yourself a rule about how much of the portfolio you would allow yourself to buy. The second thing would be, you know, am I really wanting to buy this now because I want to buy it now or just because it's becoming available? Is there any reason I'm really doing this now? You know, and that's a balance. But if we talk technically for a second, there's a couple of people involved. So there's the ETF manager and they do all the work around creating the product.
So for example, Vanguard, BetaShares, yep. BlackRock.
Yep.
Exactly. So they've done all the work, they've done all the hard work.
Yep.
Then they go to market participants who create the liquidity. And what that means is they actually go and say the ETF has 30 stocks in it. But someone says, I want to buy $2,000 of that ETF. They will actually go and have $2,000 divided by 30 companies sitting there ready to go. And they will give you those units, right? So that's all like all we need to know is there's this background thing going on, but it brings it back to the central point. Someone's just helping you buy 30 or 50 or 100 shares and they're actually going and buying them. And that's what happens. And you go from zero one day to whatever it is the next. And hopefully, if you're invested in an ETF, that does happen and it continues to happen because no one wants to be in an ETF that hasn't actually attracted any FUM and is unprofitable, because that's when things get delisted a couple of years down the track and all of a sudden you're being handed back shares or something disastrous.
Mm.
Do you see many investors on the Perla platform investing in ETFs on day one, or is it just sort of something that slowly gets added to people's portfolios over time?
Oh, there's definitely that. And there's definitely a process we go through when there are ETFs coming to market. Again, because we want to make sure things are available, we will ensure that things are going to be online at the time. And so recently, everyone obviously was quite excited about all of the listings in the States around Bitcoin ETFs. And we were getting questions a lot from people before that.
Because people can buy US ETFs through Perla as well.
Correct, of course, yeah. And so, you know, we go through a process of making sure they're available. We go through a process of making sure our team understands what is available because there's going to be inevitable questions. Everyone's doing all of this, you know, and to run a business. And that's because you want to supply the things that people want. And, and you know, the degrees are, you either want to run a business and do that and try and give people as much guidance and support as possible so they make good decisions, or you don't care. And, you know, our job is to try and care as much as possible but make sure people can really make the decisions they want. So that's what happens. We do our work to make sure people are supported. The ETF manager gets all of the approvals done. They have their brokers who create the liquidity, and all of a sudden it's there for you.
Mm. Do you ever get any data on whether it's male or females buying ETFs? Like, how does the platform like look from your side?
Yeah, so Perla's community is largely balanced. All it is, it's about 51% women and the balance men. So
wow,
that is true across pretty much every asset. So whether we're talking ETFs or the 15-20% of people's money that goes to direct stocks,
Oh, is that what it works out to be?
Yeah. Yeah, so about 86% is generally into ETFs in Australia and the US, and then people have direct stocks. So it's a totally common thing, and to have both. And we really love that stat because, you know, if everyone started their investing journey with this idea that I was going to put 85% into ETFs and I was going to customize with something else, you know, that would be a great thing, and I think that would be a great step forward in financial literacy. Anyway,
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. It might not be as exciting, but you'd have a lot of people not being 2 or 3 years into their investing journey, going back, looking back, and being like, "Oh gosh, what did I do?" So the reason I went through the general balance on gender is that it's kind of holds true for most things, with the exception of a few asset classes. So on the crypto side, definitely a skew towards men and younger men. That's probably just indicative of the broader market, anecdotally anyway. Mm-hmm. And then on ESG and impact ETFs, it's the other way. So it's about 70-75% women on a bunch of those. And so I pick on those two only because they are the only ones that stand out. And I don't know why. We can talk about why. But yeah, so crypto skews young and male, and impact and ESG skews young and female. Hmm.
And often new ETFs have really big marketing budgets. Have you seen, or are there any signs that stand out to you that an ETF has been really hyped up and we probably should take a breath before we just jump in?
Yes. But I think, you know, these ETF managers aren't what I would say multi-dimensional marketing machines. You know, the vast majority of marketing happens behind the scenes with financial advisors who are advising older clients. And that's where a lot of the money is in Australia. So, yes, there would be a huge amount of marketing going on that none of us even see. Do the ETF managers take leads from what's happening in social media and what's happening on like a macro level? Absolutely. And they'll do what they can to kind of enhance that, right? But we're all at the whim of the market, right? And so we talk about timing the market. You got to think about an ETF manager business wanting to time the market to a certain extent, because they want to list an ETF at a time where the most eyes are on it, the most people are excited about it, because no one can create that buzz through marketing alone. You got to go with the market. So they're timing the market too, to a certain extent.
Mm. Yeah, it makes sense. And like you said, the crypto example was probably the best one, where that wasn't something that you created and it wasn't something that one individual ETF provider created. It was kind of like the whole system was kind of a buzz with maybe these Bitcoin ETFs in the US are going to get approved, and then it just kind of feeds on itself and trickles its way down to, you know, Joe Bloggs here in Australia looking for a crypto ETF. He's probably thinking, well, I use Perla. How do I get exposure to that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not our, it's like, with the exception of some very, very specific things that are, you know, nothing related to crypto, it's our job to try and enable access and enable education and enable people to make confident decisions for themselves. So, you know, you always want to like do that, but then true to our brand, you want to reference the people who are actually creating the markets. Like, for instance, Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan, has been really negative on Bitcoin for a while. And he basically says in the string of quotes and things, you know, we'll help you buy it. We'll make money doing that, but we're not going to guarantee anything, and it could all go to zero tomorrow. So I think that tells you a lot about Wall Street, or let's just say big finance. And, you know, it just underlines the score of you need to educate yourself and make good decisions. And you can't take the fact that someone's granting you access to something as an advocacy for it being good or not.
Which is really interesting, and not to pick on crypto per se, but we often do hear that from that community, is that Vanguard says this, BlackRock says that, you know, big corporate finance thing says or is doing X, and that's a justification to invest. And like you say, it's a really good point you make, is just because it is available doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good thing for the person who's ultimately investing in that thing.
For sure. And, you know, so it's really easy for me to talk in that way, and I believe it, because I believe you should be really skeptical all the time of who's selling you what, whether it's finance or anything else. But it's also really easy for me to talk about it in a different way, because we've seen a lot of the gamification of trading stocks, and also almost this cultural idea that you can play with your money and who cares if you win or lose, it's a fun game, right? I'm not saying that that's everywhere, but it's certainly been something that's got a lot of people interested in trading stocks. Are thematic ETFs a more diversified, simpler way to get a bit of excitement in your portfolio? Yeah, they are. And it all just comes down to how they're used. So, you know, if we're all getting smarter, and thanks to communities like the RAS community, we're teaching each other to be skeptical and we're questioning, then these things, more access is great, and we should take it and make the most of it for ourselves, and just, you know, be a happy skeptical person.
So being skeptical, if you're not really sure about what's going on, can be difficult, especially when you're really excited. So let's say I've just seen a new ETF, I've read an article, I'm really excited, I've got $500 burning a hole in my pocket and I'm about to click buy, but I haven't really done any research. What can I do to pause right here? What can I run through in my head to sort of stop myself falling prey to a hype cycle and actually go, do I know what this is? Can I explain what it does to a friend or family member?
Yeah. So, I mean, you got to start with yourself, right? Because it's, I don't think it's responsible to say, if you don't fully understand it, stop and pause forever, because we would all be pausing forever, right? So, so that's like, this is a delicate conversation.
Yeah.
And I think people at both ends of the spectrum who are like YOLO versus, oh, these things are evil and, you know, people shouldn't be given access to them, they're both wrong, right? We're all smart and we can learn from one another. And the internet has given us online communities who've allowed us to break down these barriers. So it's like, it's neither end of the spectrum, right? But absolutely pause is the right thing. Let's just assume a few things though, right? Let's assume that you're actually in a position to be investing in equities, right? So you understand that it could go up or down. You've got no bad debt. You've got an emergency fund. Let's cast all that aside and let's try and give your case study a bit more structure just to help me answer it. Okay, so we've got all that stuff. Like, you're in a good spot. I think, and this is just my personal position, if I was starting to invest again and my first investments were disastrous, would I look back and go, is me putting $500 into a thematic ETF a good first step for me back when I was 20 or whatever? It might have been exciting and it might have got me going, but it probably would have ended up badly. And it just comes down to diversification, right? So to come to your answer is, I think pause and look at what have you got to date? And assuming you're ready to invest, are you actually diversified in stuff that is easy to understand and, you know, based on quality? So I think if you look at major indexes, we should all see companies that we use every day. We should be able to understand that. And if you don't understand that, then you've got to go back to the drawing board a little bit. But if you're there and you're excited about a thematic ETF and you've kind of done your learning by doing, you understand that you've got some investments, you understand what they're in, then look, it's going to come down to you and your ability to kind of take on board the fact that what you're investing in is probably cyclical, which means you may be investing at the top. It's probably hyped a little bit and you are excited, and that's okay, because I was excited the first time I bought stocks and that was a disaster, but I'm still here and I'm still investing. Yeah, you know, so I think the hardest part of this conversation, particularly on a podcast, is, you know, people want to have like a definitive answer to sound smart or opinionated or whatever, but you've just got to look deeply inside yourself and go, am I ready? I get told what are dumb things to do all the time. Am I doing something that's dumb? And if you can't stop yourself doing something that's dumb, then maybe you shouldn't be doing investing anyway. But it's okay to take some risks, like if it suits you. Does that make sense? Did I bring it around to a point there?
Yeah, I think so. Because in my example, I was thinking the person already has a core ETF portfolio set up and they're just really excited about a new thematic ETF.
And I think that makes sense. And I think what you said before with the data kind of suggests that your community gets it as well. So if 87%, I think it was, 87% of the money flowing into Perla each and every week is going to ETFs, I think that would suggest that your community does get it.
Yeah.
And they are informed and they are smart, because like you, and it's a really interesting way that you phrase it, if you were starting again, I started with individual stocks too, because it wasn't really a thing. Maybe we're showing our age a little bit, but I started that way. And if I had my time again, would I have preferred to have started with a thematic ETF? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not taking back what, because it ignited this curiosity about how stocks work and how the market works and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, if I was giving advice to a sibling or a whatever, general advice, of course, I would suggest that they go and they explore ETFs. And whether that's a thematic ETF because it gets them excited, rather than saying, just go and put it in the dumbest, lowest cost thing you can find and you'll probably be bored, it's probably not going to give them the buy-in.
Exactly. And so, I think that's the thing. Like, it's okay to learn. And as long as you're not learning with all your money, then, you know, even the best investors will say, I've got some expensive lessons. And if you've got, yeah, foundations laid correctly, and this is an important theme to you, and probably most importantly, you think this is a 10, 20-year theme, I think that's probably the critical point. You got to believe that in 10, 20 years, this is going to be more important to you and the world than it is today.
I walked in on a friend the other day.
Doing what?
he was at his place. I just rocked up. And I noticed that as I was waiting for him to come downstairs, he had some ETF, you know, the papers like the chess notes and that sort of stuff, just sitting on his coffee table. And I had a peek at them just to see what he was invested in. Not how much, but just had a look. And he knew. And I could see he had two thematic ETFs that were on the table. And so I started talking to him about it. And of course, they're not the types of things that I would own myself, but I was just so glad that he was investing in them, if that made sense. Makes sense. Because it was great to see that he was interested enough to do that, even without knowing what I did. He was doing that. And I think that was great, to be honest. So I don't think, like, to characterize everything as good or bad, as you said, is elegant, and I don't think it might work for marketing purposes for someone to come and say that, but at the same time, like, we're all kind of our own unique selves, you know, and whatever gets you involved in the investing conversation, I think, is positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just, you know, you got to keep going and make sure you don't put yourself at risk.
So I guess main takeaways from this conversation are that ETFs are just a wrapper. What's inside really just depends on what the ETF is. And you can look at any ETF website, or you could look at Perla, just search the code for the ETF, like A200, and then you find out what's inside it. You can find out what the rules are in constructing it.
Yeah. And you can also see on the Perla platform, I think in the statistics page, folks can see what people, like, on the average size of an investment, or like you said, gender split before, maybe age, these types of things. And that's really interesting for people that are new to investing, because it gives you a sense of, like, if you're new to investing, you listen to this podcast, you're like, oh, geez, these guys have all the answers. They know the answer. But oftentimes, we're all going on our own journey at different points. And by showing that data, you can actually see that, hey, hang on a second, that's kind of what I was thinking. And it seems like tens of thousands of other people are doing that too.
Yeah. You
know, I was thinking of a core and a satellite approach, and then Nick's has come on and said, well, most people seem to do that with 87% in ETFs, you know?
Yep. So I think to jump in there, I mean, you got to think too, we've got, you know, maybe 40% of our investors are, you know, that sort of 30 to 45 age bracket, and then it's kind of evenly split either side. So you've got a range of people of different ages. You've got a range of people that maybe 20 to 40% started investing in the last 2-3 years, and then a larger chunk in more like the 3 to 5-6 year kind of bracket. So we're all on this different journey, and that all comes down to this nice ratio of 85-86% ETFs to stocks. That's skewed, but I think what's really exciting about just showing a little bit of the community is, you know, we're all kind of on this journey. And whilst the young people might be starting with like two ETFs and I'm really disciplined and that's all I'm going to invest in 5 years' time, that might be different for them. They might want to customize a little bit. But I think the biggest takeaway is that there's a shared philosophy amongst some people that ETFs as a wrapper, as a tool, are incredibly powerful, and everyone's portfolio is going to be slightly different, but we're all kind of moving in the same direction and we're all growing and learning together. And, you know, on the whole, we're doing good. Mm-hmm. And you remind yourself that your good will be slightly different to someone else's. But as long as you're not gambling and you're really reflecting on yourself, it's okay to learn. It's okay to take some risk.
Mm. And if that takes the shape of a thematic ETF, that's a small part of a portfolio or whatever the case may be, then that's I think that's to be encouraged, if anything.
Yeah. And if you want to take it a step further, you might look at that thematic ETF and look at the top 10 holdings and go and read what those 10 companies do in the semiconductor industry or whatever.
Yeah.
And take it, you might even buy one of those companies. It's all a matter of degrees of research and being comfortable.
Yeah.
I've often used thematic ETFs as a tool to learn more about specific companies in an industry because they've already filtered it down for you. So it's an easy list to go, oh, what's the top companies in this clean energy ETF? Okay, I can research and learn more about this theme that way.
Go to their website, look at their about page or what the project is, and then you can actually learn a lot about actually what exactly it is that they do, you know?
I think that's a good step for anyone to take, whether or not they are index investors, like pure index investors or thematic investors or stock investors for that matter. The more informed you are, the more comfortable you will be.
We might add that to the list of when you're pausing, actually. Go and read the websites of the top 10 holdings and see if you understand what those companies do and see if they do what you thought the ETF was going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's a great tip.
And also, you don't need to invest in day one or week one or month one of a new ETF. It is going to be there. If it's a good ETF that gets lots of attention and lots of money flowing in, it's probably going to be there for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. There's always a watch list for everyone else to pop it on your watch list and just study it and go about your business. Well, Nick, this has been heaps of fun. It's always good to have a longtime friend on the show. And it's good to do it in person too, mate. So everyone can head to Perla. There is a link in the show notes. Been a longtime partner with Perla and it's been wonderful. And it's great to see the business succeeding and everything that you guys are doing at the behind the scenes with the team. And also, I think you do touch on a lot of important points today. And I think unless you're in the finance industry, people probably don't realize how profound that 87% is. I think that's one of the most profound statistics I've come across in the finance industry in the last few years. Specifically, I think it's for the betterment of the whole Australian ecosystem that people are using ETFs in a way that they seem to be using them on the Perla platform as opposed to all the other platforms which seem to foster trading mentalities, buy, hold, sell signals. I think there's a lot of good that you guys are doing. So that's just one kind of like little metric that people can think about as they go about their day. So, mate, thank you for joining Kate and I on the show and doing so in Melbourne in the studio. I really appreciate it.
Thank you both. Thanks, everyone.
And Kate, as always, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast. We hope you learned something new and were able to take one thing away from this episode.
If you're keen to learn more, head on over to Rask Education and take one of our free money and investing courses. You could even become a Rask Core member for less than your Netflix subscription each month. And don't forget to subscribe for new episodes in your inbox every week.
Plus, if you enjoyed the show, we'd love you to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and send any questions our way via the link in the description. And before we go on, did this podcast contain personal financial advice just for me?
Absolutely not, Kate. Our podcast actually contains general financial information only. What that means is the information does not take into account your financial needs, goals, objectives, or even your situation. So because of that, it's important that you consider if the information is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on it.
If that all sounds a bit confusing or you're still working out what your needs are, it's a great idea to consult a licensed and trusted financial planner. And don't forget to do your own research.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10, and to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart bootcamps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones,
I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at RASC, which is the launch of our RASC Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high-growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high-growth strategy focuses on longer-term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside RASC Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called RASC Core. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 RASC community members have begun the RASC plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni, and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if, you want to protect your family if something goes wrong, you want to protect your spouse if you lose your job, you want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy, insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian Property Podcast by RASC, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RASC Core, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax.
I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASC users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASC community uses each and every day. Number 8, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number 9, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASC YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASC network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the RASC Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. RASC Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the RASC Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000 and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support RASC and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the RASC network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.